this kind of inverts the paradigm, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, XQuery basically says, let's create a new programming language around this this query model, and this is kind of the inverse of that.
Yes, it is, right? Precisely that. You're absolutely right, and it's interesting because at the end of the day, you kind of gotta see, well, where do we have more investment, or where do we have more assets that we want to carry forward, right? And it used to be that programming languages were the high order bit, and then, you know, their runtime libraries were just a few little standard functions, you know, but the big learning curve was the language. Well, but today that has inverted, right? And it's all about the gigantic platform you got to learn, and then there's a little bit of language on top, right? And that means all of a sudden that the value proposition is opposite. It actually is way more valuable for us to add query capabilities to C#, because that gives you the breadth of the platform available in the middle of your query, right?
Yeah.
Then trying to build a new a new platform around query as the high order bit, right?
Right.
So that's why I think people are, you know, it's the fact that the platform has become so rich that if you can add the concept of query and set operations and transforms as a first class thing to the framework and the languages, then the synergy of what you get is just explosive.
When you say the platform, you know, that implies a lot of code assets, but it's also the case that a lot of object data now is in, its primary manifestation is CLR objects, mm-hmm. right? In, you know, in your world,
right?
And so, and this is actually the question I was asking Bill Gates as well. You know, is this that tension between the rich object types and, you know, the more interoperable XML representations, which, you know, I mean, in theory, you know, XML has its own type system, right? You could model lots of high-level semantics in XML. Lots of people think you should, mm-hmm. right? You guys aren't going that way. That's a slightly interesting tension to me.
But I think that the interesting thing, you know, the capability that objects bring to the table, too, is the notion that objects can represent the data, but they can also be proxies for the data.
Yeah.
Right? And then you can write queries in terms of the proxies and capture the intent. And then when you actually for each and ask for the result, that's when materialization happens, and then it only happens, you know, in an amortized fashion and so forth. So there are all these capabilities that, because you have this rich notion of an object-oriented infrastructure with rich metadata around it, whatever, that you get into scenarios that previously were just not even imaginable, you know, because data is data. Do you know what I mean? Well,
right.
It's more than just that, right. You know.
So, well, I mean, the fear that I would have with this is kind of analogous to something that I was just listening to in an Indigo session, mm-hmm. right? Best practices for Indigo. Mm-hmm. Don't send data sets over the wire, mm-hmm. right? You know, it's like, yeah, you can do it. It's all, you know, vanilla XML, and it's
right.
legal, but, you know, the guy who's in this other programming culture on the other end of the wire isn't going to have a good experience with that.
Right.
So this is kind of a question that I wrestle with, is that here's, for example, WinFS right now proposing to build this taxonomy of types in terms of the CLR object system, right? But these are really extremely general types, right? Messages, people, mm-hmm. organizations. So are we heading for another impedance mismatch in terms of, you know, the sort of global object system, if you will,
right.
and is that in fact an XML global object system,
right?
And then we have this Microsoft CLR object system. Is there an impedance mismatch that we're headed for there?
Well, I think, you know, in some ways, I think of language integrated query as the impedance mismatch equalizer. You know, in the sense that the thing that's so powerful about it is that it gives you a single programming model for writing queries, but it doesn't care about where the data comes from. All too often, the value proposition starts with, we are presenting the new engine, the new store. If you will put all of your stuff here, then we will give you X, Y, and Z services, right?
Yeah.
This is not about a new engine or a new store. It is about a single unified programming model that is completely extensible along any domain of data. So what we're giving you here is not a new box in the diagram, it's glue that glues the boxes together, right? And gives you query, set operations, and transforms amongst the domains, right? And so, that's the power of it.
So let's talk through some of those domains. I mean, you've shown query of objects, which, as an aside, I haven't actually gotten a chance to go to a Monad session here, but it struck me that this is totally going to want to replace a lot of what...
Well, Monad commandlets are also queryable and implement enumerable, and they all play along.
But, I mean, Monad was kind of building this pseudo-SQL-like syntax into its shell, and this looks like actually... So you showed that. You showed query through a relational adapter. You cleverly avoided showing query against an XML string.
Oh, I'd love to show you.
I was talking to one of your guys, and you know, the story that I got was at this point it's kind of an in-memory thing. Is that true?
XLink is. I mean, think of XLink as a modernized DOM. You know, it differs from the DOM in two important ways. It gives you language integrated query. So the fact that you can write queries against this object model that you have in memory. And then it synthesizes the 10 years of experience we have with the DOM, you know, and all of the things that we've learned work and don't work. And we now get sort of an opportunity to fix those.
Mm-hmm.
We get an opportunity to pick more appropriate data structures and in-memory representations for the XML. Like the DOM has some esoteric capabilities like attributes can contain unparsed entities if you turn on a certain flag. And for that reason, content must be stored as a collection in an attribute. And for that reason, the memory footprint just all of a sudden got way bigger. Do you know what I mean? And we're making some judicious choices now based on experience, with 10 years of experience with XML, you know, that allows us to reap some savings in memory, you know, and we're talking about, you know, fairly substantial savings, that, you know, between 30-50% less memory consumption for the same document. And these days, less consumption means better perf, you know, pretty much, if you haven't screwed up elsewhere.
Right. So meanwhile, you know, databases are sort of marrying XML to SQL data in a big way. So I guess maybe you can kind of review, first of all, from a relational query perspective, what... You know, you talked about deferred evaluation.
Yes,
the term?
Deferred execution.
Deferred execution.
Yeah, same thing.
Mm-hmm. Right, and optimizations there around the sort of in-memory model.
Mm-hmm.
And I can sort of see that.
Right.
I didn't get a sense of where the optimizations are when you're talking, first of all, to a relational database, and second of all, like how that would apply to SQL servers, XML data column, right?
Okay.
Where it's you know, database-backed XML,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So
let me talk about that a little bit. Let's sort of start with the deferred execution as it relates to in-memory data. So when you write a query using link and using the standard query operators that apply to IEnumerable of T, and you're writing from, where, select, or whatever, you know, the query, that particular statement effectively executes immediately and just gives you back an object that represents the query. So we're giving first-class treatment to the query itself, not to the result of the query. Now when you for each on this object, the result of the query gets produced, but not until you actually ask for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives us composability, because temporary results are never materialized. Because we don't have to first produce this and then produce this and then produce this. We can string it all together and produce it, you know, when you finally ask for it at the end. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, if the thing you ask for is a join, then you have to materialize enough.
Well, no. I'm not saying materialization doesn't happen. I'm just saying it doesn't happen at every step, at every intermediate step.
Yeah.
It only happens when you actually for each in the end on the final completely constructed query tree.
Okay.
Now, for relational queries, when the model differs in that what we construct is effectively one, instead of constructing anonymous methods and delegates to code and whatever, we construct expression trees. But really, other than that, the mechanism is the same. When you say where and select and whatever, we just create an expression tree that represents the query you have written. And then when you for each on it, Then the minute someone asks for an enumerator, then we go, okay, we've got the whole tree now. Let's translate it into SQL, send it over to the database. The database gives us back a result set. That becomes our IEnumerable, or our enumerator. And now we just read a row, fabricate an object out of that row, and hand it out. As you ask for the next one, we take the next one. Do you see what I'm saying?
Okay, so whatever cursor mechanisms are there, you'll just...
Well, this effectively becomes an encapsulation of the cursor mechanism, right?
Okay.
But yeah, yeah.
I have a curiosity about that you said earlier, that that this architecture allows you to separate out queries from a typical relational database, and if I heard you right, you could use this to tap into data sources that are generated on the fly,
mm-hmm.
Like a sensor array,
mm-hmm.
For example, and say that I, you know, in this query, I want to look at sensors in room 25 on the third floor,
right.
And get the temperature, humidity,
right.
But with generated data, there, you know, obviously its nature is that it isn't static. So when I get down to the point of zipping through iterators, if I'm looking at SQL Server, it knows what to do. It's going to grab and cache and read ahead,
mm-hmm,
and all those
mm-hmm,
good things
mm-hmm,
to mm-hmm. optimize and make sure that I have have something close to a one true source. In this case, when I'm looking at generated data, how do I, do I have to build in my own guarantees, or are you going to try to take care of that?
No, it's a good question, and I think the answer is that we are neutral on the exact materialization semantics of a query.
Okay.
I know this sounds a little geeky, but what I mean by that is that it is possible to do deferred execution with this technology, or it is possible to do upfront execution.
All right.
And for some domains, one is appropriate, and for other domains, the other is appropriate. But in order to be able to unify them, you have to have the general capability of capturing both.
All right.
And that's really sort of, I think, what sets this apart, is the fact that we don't say, Now, if you want to know for sure that data got materialized, you can call the .to array method, and boom, now you're going to get a copy.
Okay.
But if you don't, then we'll keep deferring,
Mm-hmm. Right, it's about sort of creating the most liberal set of guarantees possible to kind of preserve as much...
Right.
Right.
You can always
choice.
Tighten the contract, but you can't loosen it more than the infrastructure permits, right?
So, does it potentially get very complicated when you're mixing deferred and non-deferred queries? I mean, execution types.
Sure. Yes and no. I mean, it's sort of like views in a database. I don't know how much that they confuse people. I mean, they're in a sense also a deferred query, right? That a transformation occurs when you execute them, and you're not really viewing the real data. But the power of having that transformation on demand is tremendous and valuable. And I think it brings more good things to the table than bad.
I agree. And I really love the idea of being able to reach out to generated and even streaming sources. I've always been excited by the idea of multi-gigabit system interconnects, being able to just say, for all this data that's flying by, I'm interested in this and this and this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Being able to iterate through streaming data just creates remarkable possibilities.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. Your turn.
Well, what do you want to know? Andre does the high level song and dance, and the whole Link project for Visual Basic has been extremely exciting. I mean, part of it is because, for us too, like one of the great advantages of it is that it's really about you learn one language. You know, it could be C#, it can be Visual Basic, but you learn one language. You don't have to go out and learn SQL. I mean, a lot of our developers do know SQL because they've been forced to, but now you don't actually have to do that. You can apply that knowledge back into those query concepts back into Visual Basic. But if you want to work with XML now, you don't have to go off and grok the XQuery syntax. You don't have to grok all that stuff. It now becomes a very natural part of the language. And that's kind of the question that a lot of times when we start talking about this we get, is it's sort of like, well, we talk about all the infrastructure and all the how it all works down at the bottom, and people say, isn't this going to be too complex for Visual Basic programmers to understand? Are they going to have trouble with it? And the great thing about it is because so much of that infrastructure is underneath the syntax in the standard APIs, it feels just completely like a one small step beyond what the existing language does. And I mean, it's
that's well, obviously really the minute that people start to get IntelliSense on parameters to stored procedures, right? It's, you know.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. You know,
exactly.
How did I ever live without that?
Yes. Right.
What about coming back the other way? I mean, obviously, UConn's got very strong stored procedure connections with .NET, and are we looking at a mechanism here that will allow SQL developers to use their skills exclusively and not go out and learn C# and not go out and learn Visual Basic, but take advantage of these capabilities to tie into data sources that don't live in SQL Server.
Well, I think what you know, part of what you're seeing inside happening in UConn inside SQL Server is SQL CLR support for managed code inside the database server.
Right.
And in UConn, we're sort of laying some foundational pieces. We now allow you to write code, Sprocs in C# or VB.
Mm-hmm.
Now, your data access still happens through an ADO.NET-like API with queries and strings and whatever, but it is it is a very obvious thing for us to do to support language-integrated query in there.
Certainly.
Such that you can actually, inside SQL Server, write C-sharp code with language-integrated query, VB code with language-integrated queries, and really, you know, the programming experience for everybody sort of becomes the same, you know. In fact, the thing that the sort of big vision that I dream about here is if you imagine a 3x3 quadrant of, you know, the forms of data that are relevant, like objects, relational, and XML along one axis, and all of the programming tiers along the other, client, business tier, database server. I want to have an X in every box,
yes,
along language-integrated query, and we're getting close.
Okay.
And I think we can get there. And that would be tremendously valuable, because now it doesn't matter where you're programming and what you're programming, you get to write the code the same way.
Okay.
And I think that's a big productivity boon.
I mean, one of the really great things about it is that these APIs and the link really form such a great base to build on things on top of. I mean, like one of the things we've been looking at in VB, and which we showed in our session today, is building not just queries as a first-class concept in the language, but also XML as well, which builds on top of the XLink work. And we've been doing a lot of investigation there about how that might work. And it's really leveraging all the basic work that's being done in Link to take an even further step in terms of being able to work with data in a very high-level way. So it's really just, I mean, it's kind of, it feels like, I mean, it's amazing in and of itself, but it's this sort of great down payment on the future as well, because I think the implications will continue to sort of, you know, go out like a rock dropped in a pond, just the ripples go out forever, that sort of thing.
So. In terms of XML construction, there isn't, I think, in any of the examples that I've seen, something which has got the pure literal XML syntax that you see in like E4.
Yeah, I don't
you
think
guys
it,
are doing
they're experimenting with that in VB.
Yeah, it wasn't shown in the keynote, but definitely like in the session I did today, and you can play with it. The bits that are that we've published out, you can see basically you can say dim x equals and then open brace,
right?
You know, and just start writing your XML literals
open
directly.
Angle.
angle brace, angle bracket. Yeah. Got all my brackets wrong, but writing that directly, and then also having escape mechanisms out so that you can insert VB expressions into that are produced then values in the XML literals themselves. And it's a very powerful sort of idiom to work with when you're producing XML documents. So
what will be the story to getting to non-SQL Server data sources? Are there any proofs of concept there yet, or what are drivers in this world like?
Yeah. Well, I mean, so first of all, you know, the barrier to entry with Link is exceedingly low, because anything that implements IEnumerable T, which everything does, you know, arrays, collections, you name it, right, is now queryable, you know, with a completely relationally complete hierarchical query language and the ability to project to XML and blah, 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 you know. So that in and of itself, you know, gives you... And for a lot of scenarios, that'll be just dandy, you know, and you're not going to need to do anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Now, going beyond that, you because we sort of have a pay-as-you-go model for you know, you can get in for a very low cost, but if you really care about being able to control the execution semantics and query optimizations and whatever,
transactions, concurrency,
blah, 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 you can construct your APIs such that you ask for expression trees instead of code, and you are just given the whole query. Here's the query.
And I can mess with it and ship it back.
You go map it to whatever. You distribute it to the appropriate tiers and whatever. I'm not saying that every programmer out there is going to go do this, but
well, they will
but,
now.
But third parties or whatever, and, you know, people. So it's deep in the sense that, you know.
So we'll have sort of a replay of, you know, level one, level two ODBC driver.
Sure.
Yeah, it's like
and
a slider.
But the level is that the sort of capabilities are much bigger. Mm-hmm. You know, because really, what we're doing here is with the expression tree capabilities is today we have objects and classes with metadata, and we have a whole sort of complete system for representing programs up to sort of the class and member level, right, that you can reason about in dynamic applications. And we're extending that infrastructure now with the capabilities of with the concept of a platform-wide representation of expressions and queries that you can pass around and reason about and build services around and share, you know, because once you have a common representation of that, and it's not just for queries, actually, because if you think about it, like notification systems, they're going to want an edge trigger expressed as an expression in terms of some free objects. Well, this is great for that. Constraints in a database, you know, rules engines, you know, they all need code sort of in tree form. Do you know what I'm saying? And then that's the capability sort of at the more abstract level that we're putting into the platform.
Are you bringing sort of database paradigms like triggers, like constraints, into the realm of, you know, being one step above classes and methods? Now we've got this layer of.
I think what we're doing is really we're giving you the capability of bringing those into the system in a meaningful way, mm-hmm. without having to dream up your own domain-specific little languages and quotes where you write the trigger expression and then, oh, well, but in there I couldn't call that method or I couldn't, do you know what I mean? And
yes,
it's like, we've seen too many of those, right? And every time you see a new one, you sort of, you go, oh, gosh, here's another one of these, you know, now I have to understand their type system and their operators. And
so if somebody looks at this and says, great, now I can do, I can do queries and record sets in a more elegant way, mm-hmm. in C# and VB, that's not even the tip of the iceberg.
That's the immediate manifestation. But right. I think, you know, but it is just the tip of the iceberg. And right. I think there are much broader capabilities that lie below the surface here. And I mean, the notion that anyone, you could go, hey, if you think in-memory databases are interesting, I'm sure third parties will, you can build an in-memory database with language-integrated query. You get a full, complete query language for your in-memory database, right? I mean, it's like, that's pretty phenomenal.
Well,
you know, plus you get transform capabilities to turn it into XML or whatever. It's like, you know. But as a language designer, one of the things that I see as being tremendously important is ensuring that we don't tie the language to particular technologies either. And you'll note that all of the language extensions we have in C# 3.0 and VB9.0 completely stand on their own. And there's nothing in the language that says anything about D-Link or X-Link or whatever API that you know, and hey, if it turns out we get it wrong in one of those APIs, well, we can build another one, or third parties can build better ones and
right.
still take advantage of the query capability. When we talk about language integrated query, we're talking about a class of problems, and then there are instances of that class like D-Link and X-Link and whatever. But hey, it's a version you can derive from the class and go create your own implementations of it. That's really sort of the way to think of it. And as a language designer, customers always come to you with instances and ask for instances, and you're always trying to bring it to a class, a problem that you can solve, because that's the only way that you can ensure longevity of a platform and or a language. You can't. You have to be very careful about tying it to one particular technology, because now you sink or swim along with that.
What are some other kinds of instances that you see on the horizon?
I personally think in-memory databases is an interesting concept. I think there are lots of other stores out there, like Active Directory and whatever, that could get encapsulated, and query could benefit that. I talked, about rules engines and whatever, or trigger notification systems and whatever. So there lots of stuff. And but like I said, at the end of the day, I don't think I have the imagination but that's the good thing,
right,
about it. You know, I think it's bigger than I can imagine. I think the reason why that's possible is that we've actually sort of, this is a multi-stage rollout, you see, of this stuff. In .NET 2.0, we did a lot of hard work in the platform to put in place all of the key enablers for language integrated query. Language integrated query would not be possible without generics or anonymous methods or nullable types or all of the things that we, bent over backwards to get into the WHITBY release. And now we find ourselves in the planned for and fortunate situation that we can actually put the cherry on top called language integrated query without having to go ship a new runtime.
2.0, right.
And that's going to be great, because this allows us to tech preview and beta this stuff on existing infrastructure out there, and it's going to give us a much better experience than once we ship it. The infrastructure is already in place. It's just a question of some new assemblies, and you compile with a different compiler, but you don't have to rip and replace all the other infrastructure.
And it starts to look more and more like a dynamic language, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
You don't appear to have types, but
yeah,
you do, right?
See, that's the,
name them, but they exist, and if the constraints are violated, you'll find out about it.
I think, the way I look at it is that a lot of the stuff we're doing here would be a lot easier to do if you just got rid of the types, right? We can have queries, but then they just return property bags, and then you can just say .foo and .bar, and if they're not there, then God knows what happens, do you know what I mean? But doing it with types and getting the type inference and the flow of types is much harder. But once you do it, the payoff is much bigger, because you get statement completion and you get compile time type checking and you get reflection capabilities at runtime, and they're just like all these. And I wanted us to do the hard work,
Yeah. And that's been really great for VB, because we kind of played at both ends of the spectrum with strong typing and loose typing, and now this sort of fills in the sort of big valley between either side, so you can kind of, work anywhere on the spectrum that you want, and it's a very smooth transition. And in fact, a lot of things that used to be fully late bound can now be, appear to still be late bound,
right,
but you get the
right
types flowing
right
through the system.
Right.
It's great.
It's like having your cake and eating
exactly
it too.
Exactly. It's been wonderful.
Cool.